11 years old all over again. Oh, my God. I hated him so much when I was a kid. And I love him so much as an adult. He is one of the promoters, one of the leaders of Real American Freestyle. He is a 2021 WWE Hall of Famer, and he is the only man in 50 years to go head-to-head with Vince McMahon and beat him for 83 weeks, which is the name of the podcast that he hosts. Ladies and gentlemen, on the fan hotline this morning, Eric Bischoff joins us on the show. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here. That music just it just brings such fond memories. Thank you for that intro.
Do you ever get tired of hearing it?
No, never at all. It's like it's the first time I've ever heard it. Each time I hear it, I love it.
What's it like for a guy like you where, like, again, I said I'm 11 years old all over again, and I mean, I would tune into Nitro, and Tony Schiavone would be talking, and all of a sudden your music would come out, and you'd come out in the leather jacket, and you'd be doing the We're Not Worthy to Hogan, and I hated your guts at 11 years old, and now I'm 39, and I'm going, I just love this guy. I just absolutely love this guy. What's it like to be that type of figure for so many Americans across the country?
It's been fun. It's been a fun journey. You know, I embraced that heel character early on, and it felt very comfortable to me. And I loved it. You know, when you're a performer, I'm sure it's true for musicians and athletes in other sports and other forms of entertainment. But when you're out there in a 20-foot by 20-foot squared ring, smack dab in the middle of 10, 15, 20, 30, 40,000 people, and you manipulate that emotion, you create that energy with your performance. It's a very cool connection, and it's hard to explain, but I loved it and I miss it, but I look back on it fondly now. It was an amazing experience. I was blessed.
Do you ever notice, though, when everybody always likes to look back, it's the same thing in sports where we all say, hey, our formative years, that was when sports were at its peak. That's when we get nostalgic. Yet we've had all these newer eras of wrestling and promotions. Do you draw back to the good old days when you talk about wrestling, or do you think there are big time merits to how the sport has evolved?
Oh, I love the way the sport has evolved. When you look at the business of the sports entertainment business, I can't even call it professional wrestling anymore, because actually Real American Freestyle is legitimate professional wrestling, but people get it confused. So I refer to what we're familiar with out of WWE, for example, as sports entertainment. But it's evolved so much. The storytelling, the athleticism, the entire presentation in terms of production values, and obviously the imprint, or the impact, I should say, that it's made on a global television audience. This truly American phenomenon called professional wrestling or sports entertainment has become is much of what people outside of the United States consider Americana or American entertainment is anything. It's pretty fascinating to watch the evolution grow. But to your point, you know, it's like you said, man, when I was 11 years old, I'd sit with my friends and my family and I hated you and this guy and I love this guy. That made a strong emotional impression on you. And you're going to always harken back to that. It's like macaroni and cheese, dude. I love really, really great food. I love going to 4-star restaurants and finding the best food I can find. But there's nothing like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich sometimes. And I think that's what happens with sports and with professional sports entertainment or anything else that you reflect back on. Music is the same thing.
Eric Bischoff joining us here on the show. So the promotion is Real American Freestyle Wrestling. It comes to the Wohlstein Center August 30th. What got you involved? I mean, you're a man who has accomplished a lot. You could just kind of retire, hang out, do the podcast. What got you involved in this?
First of all, I'm very competitive, and I like building things. And when I got a call from Hulk Hogan, who I've remained close friends with for such a long time, and he said, hey, me and my other business partner, Hulk has got a business partner by the name of Chad Bronstein in his Real American Beer business. Chad has got a strong amateur wrestling background. His son is involved in amateur wrestling, and Chad's passionate about it. So Chad and Hulk were talking about, hey, what if we start a professional freestyle wrestling league? Hulk gave me a call, and I was in. I mean, I was in within 35 or 40 seconds because I know the potential. I wrestled in high school for a couple of years. I wrestled out of high school for a couple of years in AAU freestyle and Greco. I know the type of people that are at that elite level of amateur wrestling, and they're very, very unique people. They've got great stories, and they're phenomenal athletes. And that's what I'm here to do, is to bring those personalities out so that the world gets to know these athletes and appreciate them for what they are and tell a great story. So I couldn't wait to sink my teeth into this, to be honest with you. It's risky. You know, starting a professional sports league comes with all of the challenges one can imagine and many that you can't. But wow, what an opportunity. I'm so excited for it.
You're the perfect person to ask this. Eric Bischoff joining us now on the hotline, because I had always thought, as somebody who kind of paid attention to actual wrestling, like in high school with my buddies, or I covered it in college when I was at Ohio State, they had some really, really strong wrestlers. I often thought that they got short shrift from the public because the WWE, WWF, WCW, that's what people grew up with. They had that true entertainment and, you know, the athleticism and guys oftentimes that did wrestle in their past lives. And I always felt like I felt bad for the actual wrestlers, especially like the Olympic wrestlers. I thought they should have been larger than life. And I think there is a way that we can love both of these, right? There are ways that we can promote both of these, understand the differences. And in fact, you're seeing more and more of a crossover.
No, you are. And I think one of the things that really excited me is if you just step back and kind of look at the growth of combat sports, and particularly the UFC and the success that the UFC had. Well, if you look at a lot of the UFC champions, the ones that stand out, I'll just throw out John Jones as an example, they all have, not they all, many of the top challengers or champions have an amateur wrestling background. Freestyle wrestling, amateur wrestling is the foundation. Bo Nichols said it best. It's one of the cornerstones of MMA. And I think because MMA has become so popular and fans have become so much more knowledgeable, that now fans can appreciate the level of ability of elite freestyle wrestlers and Olympic wrestlers, as you mentioned. Now is the platform, because I think the interest is there probably in the sport now because of combat sports. And we are. We're the newest entry in the combat sports category. And it's an exciting spot to be in. But I think because of the popularity of MMA and combat sports, freestyle wrestling is going to find its own audience.
Yeah, I'm curious for the people that are going to be showing up to this or might be on the fence, other than the actual wrestling, and we know we're going to see some legitimate, awesome wrestling, what can the people expect on a jam-packed night of entertainment?
Well, it's like one of the things that you don't get when you, for example, when you see the NCAA finals this past spring. You know, you don't get to know the athletes. We're going to present Real American Freestyle in a format that's similar to what you would expect in the UFC. You're going to see packages where you really get to know these athletes. You know, Chael Sonnen is our color commentator, obviously extremely well-known guy, got a lot of credibility both as a freestyle wrestler, amateur wrestler, and in MMA, given his association with UFC. We've got another big surprise that we're going to be announcing probably tomorrow that's going to be joining us, but you're going to see a much more entertaining presentation of freestyle wrestling than you've ever seen anywhere else. You're going to see things, you're going to learn things that you won't learn typically watching, you know, NCAA wrestling or even Olympic wrestling coverage.
Eric Bischoff joining us here on the Fan Hotline. So as this starts to pick up off the ground, I mean, again, it's going to be at the Wohlstein Center on August 30th. You can go to realamericanfreestyle.com to buy tickets for this event. When it comes to television, when it comes to being able to see it online, where could people possibly go here in the future?
You know, I wish I could tell you, because it's like the best kept secret in television right now. And we'll be making an announcement on the 21st. but you will be able to find it on television. All that information will be coming out very, very soon. We're excited about it. We just want to wait and announce it on the 21st.
When it comes to sports entertainment, professional wrestling, I mean, you were a big part of one of the rebirths of pro wrestling. You know, it's cyclical. It comes, it goes with the general public. What do you think of the current product right now as it sits with everything, not just WWE, but with everything going on?
I mean, undeniable success. I mean, I'm talking specifically about WWE. Everybody else is kind of in the game, but don't really matter. You know, if you look at AEW and TNA, they're in the industry, but they're not really a factor. When you look at WWE, just look at their international television footprint, and especially now with Netflix. You look at the events that they're producing. I mean, the business of the sports entertainment business is absolutely staggering. It never ceases to amaze me. The action, you know, there's so much more wrestling now that to me it kind of all looks the same to a degree, but the characters are more interesting than I think they've ever been. The storylines are far more disciplined and detailed than they ever have been. It's just fascinating to watch. It really is.
I'm just curious, Eric, you've been around so long and you have so many great stories and just great background. So I think you'd be perfect person to ask this question. Who are your favorite actual wrestling announcers?
Ooh, that's an easy one in some respects. You know, in terms of color commentators, I don't think anybody will ever live up to the expectations and the standard that Bobby Heenan set. Bobby Heenan, I think, was one of the best. When it comes to play-by-play, hard to deny Jim Ross as the voice. You know, Michael Cole is doing a great job in WWE right now, but Jim Ross has got one of those voices. It's like that macaroni and cheese thing, only for your ears. You know, you hear Jim Ross's voice, and it just brings back so many memories, and he has so much credibility. So those are the two that stand out to me the most.
All right, who is a guy, Eric, that, you know, we've seen so many wrestlers have different personas until they hit, you know, obviously stunning Steve Austin. Who's a guy, though, that you thought should have connected, but for whatever reason, the gimmick, for whatever reason, just never did?
Oh, gosh, there's a million of them, and some of them are still friends of mine. So,
how about an enemy? Somebody who's an enemy instead.
Yeah, go ahead. It don't matter.
No, I tell you one that I think about often, because he is such a close friend of mine. Ernest the Cat Miller. Now, that's not a name that, you know, people are going to go, oh, I remember Ernest the Cat Miller, because Ernest was really only in the business for a couple of years. And I had to talk him into getting into professional wrestling. He's a martial artist, still is, competitive. But he was an active, very high-ranked world champion kickboxer. He was my son's karate instructor. And I met Ernest when I dropped my kid off to karate one day. And I went, man, this guy's got personality. He's an amazing athlete. I got my black belt, you know, back in 79, and I was a kickboxer for a few years. So I could recognize what he brought to the table athletically. And in terms of his martial arts ability. So I said, Ernest, man, I got an idea for you. And it took me like 3 weeks to talk him into even coming down and just stepping into the ring and feeling it out. But he took to it like a fish to water. He had so much charisma. He got so good. But I think he came in about a year or two early. Late. Had he come in a couple years earlier, I think he would have been one of the bigger names in the late 90s. Just timing. Sometimes timing is everything.
During the 83 weeks where you beat the WWE, what were you most proud of during that stretch?
I think recreating the television format. And, you know, if you're not in the television business, that those words don't really register. You don't really know what it means. But if you go back and you look at WWE's product up until about 1996, 97, It was a teen and preteen product, meaning all their characters, their storylines, their entire presentation was targeted specifically to a teen and preteen audience because that's where your ad dollars were. That's where their licensing was. That's where the ticket sales were because mom and dad have to buy the tickets and bring the kids to wrestling. So that was all their focus. When I launched Nitro in 1995, I knew I couldn't compete with them for that teen and preteen audience. So I put all of my resources and focus on men 18 to 49. That was the thing that changed the business to the extent that what you're watching today is a reflection of the changes that I made in presenting Nitro. The reason I was able to beat WWE 83 weeks in a row, I beat them a lot more than 83 weeks, but 83 weeks in a row was because I changed the format and the focus. Eventually, so did WWE. It became the Attitude Era. They basically mimicked our format. And I think that that probably had the most significant change in the professional wrestling industry that we've seen in the last 50 years, to be honest with you.
The website, realamericanfreestyle.com. That's where you can go to buy tickets. It's at the Wolstein Center, August 30th. Some of the great, great wrestlers that you will ever see at this event coming up on August 30th at the Wolstein Center. The great one, Eric Bischoff, with us on the show. Eric, thank you so much for the time. All the very best to you.
Great, man. Appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you all there. 10 new world champions being crowned in the first ever Real American Freestyle event. You don't want to miss that. Combat sports' newest entry.
Absolutely awesome. Eric Bischoff, thank you very much for the time. Eric Bischoff, the great one on the fan hotline. The response is swift. Boy, you put anything up about Shador Sanders on the internet, you better turn them mentions off because it is a fist fight right now. It is a free-for-all in them mentions right now. Twitter reactions brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. It's like, hey, man, I'm just sharing it. You take it for what it is. I'm looking at a guy who's putting in his work. That's what I'm looking at. Greg McElroy, remember him? He was the quarterback at Alabama, was a quarterback under Nick Saban. We will have Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk joining us at 9. Maybe might ask him this question. Greg McElroy, who was a former quarterback at Alabama, he hosts a morning show at WJOX in Birmingham. This is yesterday, and I got hit two clips here. Because didn't he go on another show later on?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is Greg McElroy on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. And here is a question about Nick Saban and whether or not
Pete
he might.
Feinbaum was part of this, too.
And Pete Feinbaum was on, or Paul Feinbaum was on the show.
Ted, too.
And he asked about Nick Saban not being done coaching yet.
I have one more for you, Paul. This is a little bit out of left field, but the question was asked of me. Very much in the know person that I have a lot of respect for and have spent a lot of time around and just really, really admire. They seem to think Nick Saban's not done coaching, but he's pretty adamant that he thinks Nick Saban will be coaching again. Do you buy that?
No.
That's what I said.
Okay. So Paul Feinbaum doesn't believe that Nick Saban's going to come back and coach, right?
I am so baffled at how quickly he's like, well, that's what I said.
So he's asked a question and then he goes, well, that's what I said. Well, apparently it went nuts on the internet, and then Greg McElroy went back on WJOX later on and clarified himself here.
I did have a couple of people that I respect say, don't rule out Coach getting back in it. He's too competitive. I think he loves the game too much. Like, don't rule it out. I'm like, no way. Come on. That was my reaction like everybody else. I rule. Come on. Get out of here. No, I was like, just saying, don't rule it out. I'm like, all right, that's cool. I'll ask Paul. like Paul's connected. I'll ask him on the show on Monday. So I asked him point blank. I was like, Paul, I wouldn't ask the question if it weren't a couple people I trust and respect that seem to think that this is a possibility. And Paul and I both kind of laugh like, no, absolutely not. I don't see it as a likelihood. Like, he's completely content doing what he's doing. I don't get it. So I don't know how people can connect the dots from one thing to another. Didn't intend to start any firestorms this morning by any stretch.
What?
Ken Carmen.
Yeah, what?
Let's say I'm talking to Andrew Barry. Hey, or Jimmy Haslam. Jimmy Haslam's better. Hey, Jimmy Haslam, there have been these rumors out there, very specific rumors about you guys going back to the Hugh Jackson well to be the coach of the Cleveland Browns. I mean, is there any validity to that, all the stuff I'm hearing about Hugh Jackson? No, that's what I said. Yeah, that's what I said. I said the same thing. Yeah. Why are you asking? Like, in the lead-up to the question, the whole point of the question is because McElroy is hearing something.
Well, you would say,
and then he knocks it down.
Well, if you didn't believe any of it, you would say, hey, Paul, I'm getting some people who know Nick very well and are saying he's not done coaching. I don't believe it, but you're the authority on this, Paul. What do you say?
A little birdie told me that Johnny Football is maybe going to come back and try again, be the quarterback for the Browns. Is that true? No. I know. That's what I said. That's what I said. I said the same thing.
Yeah, I said the same thing. Nick Saban is 73 years old.
Oh.
So he'd be taking over a team at 74 years old.
Bischoff is 70.
Both are very active. Boy.
Both look great.
These guys, I mean, people are going to be living a long time here.
Yeah.
Both these guys look great. I know Nick Saban can afford the look, but my God, I mean, these are good looking men here, and they look like they're going to be living a very long period of time here. If all right, let's entertain it for a second. Mm-hmm. If Nick Saban were to come back and come back to coach, at what level would it be?
I mean, he'd be great at college. He would be really
good.
Would
he be better off right now in the NFL? Let me explain why. Do you or do you not have more power over your players in the NFL now than what you do in college football? I think it's almost completely flipped.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, contracts are contracts. These guys are 1099 contracted employees.
Free agents after every year.
Yeah, and in college, you are free agents every year. But I'm talking in the NFL here. I mean, you have a situation where coaches, head coaches, are more powerful than they've ever been. Well, than they've ever been in the last 50 years, I'd say, 40 years. It used to be a lot of head coaches. They were just at the thing with general managers. We always remember the stuff with Bill Parcells saying, you know, you're going to make me cook the dinner. At least you should let me shop for the groceries. Now you have a lot of coaches who are really heavily involved in all this and are making the main decisions, and they've kind of made the general managers work for him. Well, ain't no way a general manager is going to be overseeing Nick Saban. So Nick Saban will have that power. I think that Nick Saban might pay attention to a couple of these things. And I hate to tell you, his contemporaries, and who would you put him in the same stratosphere? Well, you put Bill Belichick in the same stratosphere. And then there's everyone else. But on that outer shell is Urban Meyer. And I think that Nick Saban looks at what Urban Meyer wasn't able to do with the Jacksonville Jaguars and is like, I can do a hell of a lot better than that. And then he sees the stuff
Urban
that's
Meyer
going on.
Probably sees what he did with Jacksonville. It's like, I could do better than that.
But he's also seeing the stuff that Bill Belichick is with going to college. And he's like, I got Miss Terry. I'm all taken care of. I don't know why I'm trying to do a Nick Saban impression all of a sudden. I have Miss Terry. My home life is secure. Maybe I can do a better job. And maybe I can even do it in the NFL. I would also wonder, would he go to a place that has zero expectations?
Mm.
Would he go to a place that has zero budget where the player, he would literally be the reason the players go there because they don't have NIL. Like, would he go to a Kent State? Where he graduated college from, would he go to a Kent State?
You know who actually kind of did this? Calhoun.
Jim Calhoun,
Calhoun kind of did this and went to a small,
Central Connecticut?
D3? Do you go D3?
I think that happens a lot in I shouldn't say a lot. It happens way more often in basketball than it does any other sport, right? Where these guys kind of go down and to a school that's maybe lesser than where they've been, like Patino did it, and he's brought St. John's back and all that. But I don't think you can say he would go to a school and there'd be no expectations. I think anywhere that Nick Saban goes, the expectations automatically change, even if it was Kent State, who's been the worst football program in D1, right? Or in FBS, whatever we're calling it now. If he went there, the expectations would automatically change for them.
It was St. Joseph's in D3, by the way. Yes, it would. But now that the conversation, see, whether he likes it or not, what Greg McElroy started was the conversation. Because now, if there is any sort
of... Oh, Greg likes it. That was,
well, yes, obviously. But if he says he's getting text... That's why, okay, if this year doesn't go that way for the Browns, do you or do you not entertain calls from fans about Nick Saban? You do. You do. If he's saying that people who know Nick Saban well say, oh, he's not done coaching yet, you don't entertain that?
Well, for years.
I know he'll be 74 years old, but you got two first-round picks. You can finally give him the quarterback that he always wanted. Or maybe by the look of my videos here, maybe Shador will be that guy.
I do think the age scares people off. I mean, because we brought Belichick up. And the last time we brought Belichick up, people didn't seem very interested.
But Belichick's personal life is a little bit out there right now. I mean,
I was actually interested in the personal life.
Well, I know you are interested in the personal life, but a lot of people don't really trust it, including the boosters at UNC.
That's true. I did see some of those emails were released.
Yes, you did. But Nick Saban, I mean, his personal life's buttoned up. Like his wife is a pretty respected person within the community and whatever community she's in, especially with the University of Alabama. He's obviously a saint in Alabama, in the state of Alabama, and get done whatever he wants done. If he looks at it and goes, maybe I have a little bit left in me, I have another challenge, maybe he can. It doesn't mean, like, listen, if he were to go and coach again, I do think it would be more like a Kent State situation. I think it would be no NIL.
Which would be awesome.
I'm the reason guys come here. I lord over this program, which would be awesome to see.
We've always wondered. It's some of those questions in life that we never get a real answer to. You know, things like, hey, if Tom Brady went to a different team, could he win the Super Bowl? We actually got to find out, and it was awesome. We did it really later in life.
Yes.
I would love to know if tomorrow Nick Saban becomes the head coach of a Kent State, an Akron. You know, these games that I get to watch, I always wonder, what would Nick Saban do? Like, if he didn't have the built-in advantages of
Wasn't
all the
in
resources.
The
yeah. Yes.
How would he do? And I'd love to know, and we never get to find out.
I think that, and frankly, he is the only guy out of that triumvirate. I mean, Urban Meyer crashed and burned. I think there's a perception that UNC is going to be a joke by a lot of people. I want to let him show me his work first before it's a joke. I mean, it is Belichick, for crying out loud. Maybe this is all overblown. But it seems that this thing's going to be a joke at UNC for a lot of people. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt as a Hall of Famer and the greatest to do it. I can't see that ever being a scenario with Nick Saban. I can never see there being an expose on all these players being treated like dirt or somebody within the program that nobody trusts or anything like that. I just can't see that ever being around Nick Saban. And so you would automatically have some credibility. It may not go well. It may be 10-7, 9-8 at very best. But you're going to have credibility. He's going to bring a respect to the position as your coach. So, yeah, if there is a nuclear option to push, Greg McElroy's put that out there. I don't care what he says. Yeah, you're going to have a Nick Saban conversation at some point. ESPN, they had their NFL execs list out yesterday. Top 10 quarterbacks, that's from the scouts, the execs, and the coaches. It is a blind study. They had their top 10. Baker Mayfield was number 10. A argument ensued over Baker Mayfield and Justin Herbert on ESPN. Here is Kevin Clark and Dan Orlovsky.
Would you rank Baker Mayfield over Justin Herbert?
Yes, I would.
He led the NFL in interceptions last year. A lot of the things, because it's Tampa, we don't associate it with an amazing roster.
So you're telling me you would take Herbert over Baker?
I would, yes.
Everyone's going to take Justin because he's 6'6", 250 pounds, and the ball comes off of his hand like a howitzer. But I've watched Baker. I've watched Baker in two different places be awesome. I've watched Baker just be clutch after clutch and make big time throws.
If right now, in some fantasy world, there was a one-for-one swap, Justin Herbert plays in the Tampa Bay Bucks, I would pick Tampa Bay Bucks to win the Super Bowl.
That is audio courtesy of ESPN. Can we talk about Baker Mayfield without it being a total slight and nastiness and bitterness and all that other stuff? Can we do that? Can we do it? Can I say that I respect Baker Mayfield and the career he's rebuilt for himself and also say that he has limitations? Can we do that without any fear or reprisal of being told that we're in our feelings or we're just bitter because he's doing well? Can I do that, please? I know we've had a very emotional time here over the last 3 years. Can I do that, though? Because if you give me permission to do that, I think that those two guys are some of the most arguable guys in this top 10. Because Herbert, and I think that Owen would agree, because I think that Owen was the first one to this, is that Herbert is the most media-protected quarterback in the NFL that I've probably seen in the last decade. But Tim Tebow might be the only one who's a little bit more. I mean, there is nothing Justin Herbert can't do to the media because he is 6'5", and he does have a good, strong arm. Baker Mayfield does have a good, strong arm. But let me tell you this. The reason why you would still take Justin Herbert is because the coach goes, it's easier to work with that frame than it is this frame. That's what a coach would say. Dan Orlovsky played the game at a level that was high. I know that people want to make jokes because he ran out of the back of the end zone, but that's part of it. Dan Orlovsky's an underdog his entire career. He played in the league. Of course he's going to gravitate towards Baker Mayfield. And rightfully so, because Orlovsky was an underdog. And Baker Mayfield seems like the ultimate underdog to everybody. Baker Mayfield has overachieved with his frame. Baker Mayfield has done an exceptional job with the weapons he has with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But these two are the two of the most arguable guys out there, because there's still people looking at him and go, 6 foot, squat, toad, ain't that great. It's like, no, he's good. I don't know why people say he doesn't have a strong arm. I think those are people that just decide that they're not going to watch football and they're just going to regurgitate something that their friends told
him. No, his arm is fine.
He's got a good, strong arm. But when it comes to the frame, this is not about hating Baker Mayfield, being bitter about Baker Mayfield, none of it. A coach is going to take Justin Herbert, because Justin Herbert has a want. Justin Herbert fights for his position as well. Justin Herbert wants to lead and wants to play hard. You're going to take 9 out of 10 guys are going to take Justin Herbert, because it's easier to work with that than it is to work with this.
I've been waiting for the Justin Herbert to arrive that I've been hearing about forever. And I've probably been...
Frankly, me too.
I've been just as guilty of what you just said the media has been doing when it comes to any of the conversation. I've done the same thing. And what did I say last year? Oh, now he's got a coach. Now he's got a real, real coach with, you know, apologies to our Staley friends and family that listen to the show. But he's got Harbaugh. I mean, Harbaugh is a proven, both in college and the NFL, is a proven successful coach. And I thought that when he got him, that was going to be such a game changer. And I almost wonder if Harbaugh looked at him and is like, we got to really protect the football. Because, yeah, he threw 3 interceptions last year. Also only threw 23 touchdowns. He played the whole season. He was healthy. 23 touchdown passes in the year 2025. But that is not a team that is willing and a coach that is willing to put the ball in the hands of the quarterback.
I have a reasoning behind all that, but I don't want to bog it down. Go ahead.
Well, everybody wants to treat him like he's Josh Allen, and he's way more Trevor Lawrence than he is Josh Allen.
Thank you.
Right now.
It's 100% true. Neither of these guys, to me, are top 5. I think that Baker has a reasoning to be top 10. I have my questions about Justin Herbert because, again, I only talk about frame. I only talk about what they offer to the table physically. And Baker, you cannot state... It's part of the reason people love Baker is that he is completely overachieved with what God has given him. With Justin Herbert, we're waiting to see this other side. But coaches are going to want to take 6'4", 6'5", Justin Herbert as a Josh Allen light than they are going to want to take 6 feet tall. It's just the fact of the matter. And you go back to what with Jim Harbaugh is, you know, they put too much. I still thought they put too much on Justin Herbert in Los Angeles to start off his career, throwing the ball all over the place, putting him in a position to make turnovers, putting him in a position to remember those turnovers, too much. Going forward on fourth down, too much, where Brandon Staley put him in a bad position. See, you always call him the Staley because of the family, so I always want to say, I mean, Brandon Staley would probably go, I did it too much and I should have learned from that mistake. But I think for Justin Herbert and Jim Harbaugh, they kind of had to go back to basics. Let's turn around, let's hand off the football, let's run ourselves into a possibly a wild card spot, and then we'll build from there. We'll protect him first. And guess what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did? The same exact thing with Baker Mayfield. That's why they're both in the conversation. You can't compare these guys to any of the top 5 quarterbacks that we talk about a whole lot. Even Joe Burrow, who hasn't accomplished a whole lot because of the injuries. But these guys are comparable guys. One is overachieving right now with what God has given him. The other one has been an underachiever. And frankly, because of the conversation that surrounded him, because he is so physically gifted, I think guys like us get tired of it. It's like you got to put him up on the scoreboard at some point. And Baker Mayfield, the clutch thing, I still think he gets pretty tight in big
games. We've seen that. We definitely have seen that, but
he does.
There's no doubt, like, he can be trusted.
A really good job.
He can now be trusted.
Yes,
to be a franchise quarterback, and he had just a dazzling year last year. Now I don't love Baker, like you said, coming from behind against tougher opponents. That's been a spot that he hasn't really succeeded in. So I do think there's a limitation there. I think there's going to be a ceiling to Baker, but he's way better than I thought he'd be. I mean, I'll give him that without a doubt. He has evolved. By all accounts now, he's been great in the locker room in Tampa. We didn't always hear that.
I wish we had this guy.
He even admits it. But he admits it. This is important. A lot of guys say things and you just wonder if it's lip service. He says that his growth as a man, you know, and as a leader, it's leaps and bounds ahead of where it was when he was in Cleveland.
But no, and the reason why no one wants to listen to any of that at all, what you just said is right, and he's admitted to it, is because the winners write the history. And right now, he's the winner of all this. He gets the people who love him get to write the history. Because I think that a lot of people would hear what you're saying about Baker Mayfield and how there was resentment in the locker room, and I think they're going, yeah, the wrong other guys in the locker room. No matter what Baker says about that time, they'll say he had the wrong other guys in the locker room. And at 3-13, it's hard to argue it, is it not? 3-14?
Yeah.
I lose count sometimes.